changes. Play clock down to two. He's got to hurry. Takes the snap. Turk, give. Back up. Okay, they didn't get it off. They didn't get it off. So a quick false start.
Oh, my God.
A tumbler out of the air. Far side of the field underneath it. Lockett fakes it. They're coming to the near side. That's what it was to the 20, 25, 30. To the near side, 50. Running to the 40. And he's got a clean path unless they can get him. And no doubt it does. Along with help from Timu, they get him inside the 20-yard line. Richard Sherman takes it quite a distance, 64 yards.
Jagaloo.
Big gap, 25, 30, 35, 40. Robbie doesn't have an angle. There he goes, 40. Lockett's gone. Nobody's going to get him. It happened again. And the Seahawks go up 12-0.
I don't want to hear about your damn problems. Everybody got problems.
Wilson has time, throws a dart.
Like the poopy just lost a testicle.
Caught, Graham, 10, on his feet, 5, goal line end zone.
My dog just threw up somebody's finger.
Touchdown, Seattle.
That's a problem.
The Bears will fall to the Seahawks 26-0 here at CenturyLink Field.
Okay, so here's the good news. The ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast has not been traded for a sixth-round pick. I have not been traded. Arthur has not been traded. Hub would garner a first-round pick, but he is still here. Ryan Pace cannot trade us, even as he tries to trade everybody Phil Emery brought to the Chicago Bears. I am Kevin Fishbane, your host, joined by my co-host Arthur Arkish, executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer John Solly on hand. That was the good news, the bad news. The Bears are 0-3. They got shut out by the Seahawks. We're going to obviously give you the briefest recap possible into that. And then we'll talk about trade week. Jared Allen gone. John Bostic gone. Brock Vereen waived. And we'll preview Bears-Raiders. Can the Bears get their first win of the season against the Oakland Raiders? Remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, the Chicago Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Bears_Insider. I am at K Fishbane. He is at Arthur Arkish. And of course, all of our work is at ChicagoFootball.com. Arthur, we'll get to the trades later in the show. Let's talk Seahawks. Bears lose 26-0. It wasn't that bad in the first half, but unfortunately, the Bears are still 0-3 if you only take into account their first halves, so it really doesn't make that much of a difference, does it?
No, but I was going to say, if they only had to play 30 minutes of football, I don't think there'd be so much doom and gloom in this city. The key for the Bears, the young rebuilding Bears, is to find a way, of course, to string 60 minutes together because they've played three competitive first halves and essentially had the doors blown off after intermission. So I think that has to be a top goal moving forward, most certainly.
And how amazing was it that they go into halftime, they're down 6-0. The offensive game plan, even though it wasn't really moving the ball that well, was doing what it was supposed to do. The defense is playing really well. We'll get to the pass rush in a little bit. And then they come out of the locker room. The number one biggest problem with this team has been kickoff coverage, and they give up a kickoff return touchdown. I think you were the one who asked Jeff Rogers, a special teams coordinator, about Tyler Lockett, and they clearly were aware of Tyler Lockett. They'd already given up a big punt return. They come out of the locker room and give up that kickoff return touchdown. I know the players don't want to say it's deflating, but if you were Matt Forte or if you were Pernell McPhee or one of the players having a good game and you see that, how do you not just bury your head in your hands and be like, how did this happen?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did. We didn't have the sideline view, obviously, but like you said, it's hard to keep that positive momentum going. You're hanging in there with the NFC champs, and to come out and surrender that. And like you said, I did ask Jeff Rogers the question. He did beam about Tyler Lockett, said he was the best in a really good rookie return class. They were so aware of him, and we found out just how aware they were, like you said, seconds into the second half beginning.
Well, they already made one change on the kickoff coverage unit by waiving Brock Vereen. Said we'll get to that a little bit later in the show, but as we do every week, we recap the Bears game with our three and out.
One, two, three!
I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
One, two, five!
Three,
three!
right, Arthur, one positive, one negative, one moment that mattered. What is your positive from Bears Seahawks?
I'm going to go with a bounce back game for the Chicago cornerbacks, Kyle Fuller, Alan Ball, throw Sherrick McManus into the mix and throw Tracy Porter finally into the mix. I thought he showed some things as a blitzer. Look, I don't think that Seattle's receiving core is even average. It's clearly been a weakness for this team in recent years, but sometimes that's what you need to start getting that confidence back. We knew that confidence was an issue for Kyle Fuller in particular. Vic Fangio said as much last week, and aside from one break he caught on a drop touchdown pass, I thought he had a relatively clean game. I thought Alan Ball was terrific for him to go up and get the pass break up at the end of the first half against Jimmy Graham and just go up and compete. That's the kind of plays that he was brought to Chicago for. So the key now, obviously, is building it. They saw two really good receiving cores in Arizona and Green Bay, and not such a good one in Seattle. It's looking up again in Oakland with Amari Cooper coming to town.
Yeah, it wasn't so much Alan Ball's, you know, good coverage, because the coverage has been there, but as you said, it's the ball skills, because that's been his issue the first 2 weeks, so it was nice to see that. My positive, the pass rush, led by Pernell McPhee with his two sacks. Here, listen to his first one.
Snap is back, play fake, settles in the pocket, pressure coming, McPhee's got him, and down he goes. Pernell McPhee with a Jimmy Graham trying and not even coming close to dealing with Pernell McPhee. He sacks him and back around the inside the 25-yard line. So nice big sack by Pernell McPhee, his first as a Chicago Bear.
Of course, Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer there for 780 WBBM and 105.9 FM. Pernell McPhee got a sack in the very next play. And one of the things that Jarvis Jenkins talked to us about the game, after the game, Arthur, and he talked to us about this on Monday, getting that inside pressure allows for McPhee to get the rush off the edge, and he, you know, abused Jimmy Graham. Jenkins himself had two sacks, 10 quarterback hits on a guy in Russell Wilson. They did a good job containing him in the pocket, too. So I thought the pass rush was probably the biggest positive takeaway from this one. What was your biggest negative? I don't know what you're going to pick. There's so few to choose from.
Right. Yeah, this was a tough call. I'm not even going to look at one play or a series of plays, but it's more so the game plan going in. I just thought it lacked, frankly, courage. You know, what do you have to lose? The Bears are going to Seattle. No one thinks they can win. And I think they try one or two passes more than 15 yards down the field. John Fox had several opportunities to go for it in the second half on fourth and short and elected to punt. So I have a hard time thinking that that is inspiring confidence in the players when they really need something positive to build on. I thought the coaches kind of failed their players a little bit this week.
Yeah, you know, and we can have this discussion all day long. I think if Mark Trestman was here, they would have gone for it. But I think if Trestman was here, Jimmy Clausen would have thrown the ball 45 times because he thought that they could win that way. I think the staff's a little more realistic. I did see, though, John Boyce, SB Nation writer, who's awesome, very funny guy. He did a chart looking at the Bears' 10 drives and 10 punts. And he said that he looked up no team in the last 5 years with a 4th-and-1 in the second half near midfield within 5 yards down in the game has ever punted until the Bears did in the past 5 years. So, yeah, you know, that's some people who know John Fox well were not surprised by that move. I also kind of chalk it up there down 20-0. Fox is just like, well, you know, he would never admit this, but he probably knew what was going to happen. So, but no, I think that's a good point. And my biggest negative, kind of along those lines, is just the fact that we didn't get to see, you know, with Jimmy Clausen, didn't give himself really an opportunity to throw the ball downfield. They didn't give him a chance. Look, if Jimmy Clausen can't throw the ball downfield, he shouldn't be your backup quarterback. If he can't make some of these throws, you should have found someone else to be your number two quarterback. I know it's Seattle. I know it's a tough environment, but you have to give yourself a shot. And even when he was in opportunities, you know, you can see it on the All-22 slideshow at chicagofootball.com. He had an instance where he threw it to Martellus Bennett short of the first down, and the other receivers hadn't run their routes yet. And the pass protection was fine. So that's something that we'll see if he gets fixed for this week against Oakland. All right, Arthur, your one moment that mattered.
Yeah, you know, we've obviously talked about the big one, and it's kind of a cop-out, so I won't go with it. But allowing Tyler Lockett to return that kick, you know, the game was over at that point. And I don't want to be too clever, so I won't say Jay Cutler getting injured in week two, though I think both of those moments are ultimately the ones that mattered. There was a rush from Jarvis Jenkins. It escapes me when it was, but he had Russell Wilson in his sights. I believe it was either third. It might even have been fourth down. Wasn't quite able to get there, allowed Wilson to kind of pitch it off, I think, to Jimmy Graham. They moved the chains. It was the one example of the rush not getting home, so maybe that's kind of cheap, but it's one that stands out in my head. Also, Jimmy Clausen, the one other deep ball that he missed, Josh Bellamy, I think the second series of the second half when the Bears were still only down two possessions.
Yeah, Bellamy had a step on Richard Sherman on that play, and it wasn't a terrible ball. It just was, you know, he overthrew it. My moment that mattered was the challenge that didn't work out. You know, when Sheriff Manis got that ball off that punt, the Bears would have been down 3-0 with the ball as far as they would have had it all game long, right in the Seahawks red zone. And the replay sure made it seem like it hit a Seahawks player, and the NFL did not agree. Dean Blandino said there was not clear evidence it touched a player, even though it clearly changed direction after going at least near a Seahawks player. That would have changed the entire game, I think, if the Bears could have at least gotten points there. Because remember, they didn't get past the Seattle 45 all game long, and there was their special teams play. NFL blew the call, and the Bears, you know, obviously couldn't take advantage and never got anything going on offense. So, you know, it's a game of what ifs, but I would have been curious to see what could have happened if they had the ball in that opportunity. All right, we're done. We're never talking about the Week 3 26-0 loss to the Seahawks ever again. Frankly, Arthur, I think we talked about it too long. So let's move on and start talking about trade week in Hallis Hall. So we're sitting in the Hallis Hall media room. You know, John Fox has just talked to the media about the game, the Seahawks game that we're not allowed to talk about anymore. And then we find out Jared Allen's been traded. And I don't think... When I step back, I don't think it's the biggest surprise in the world, because all the Bears really needed was a 4-3 team that was willing to trade for Jared Allen. And it, from Jay Glazer's report, it looked like Allen wanted to make that move. They get a sixth-round pick for him. I'm curious what your immediate reaction was to the trade.
Well, I just thought it was a momentous occurrence in this new regime. It was the second most high-profile signing of Phil Emery, who was jettisoned. We knew that they spent the whole offseason trying to move that, you know, signing number one in Jay Cutler. So, you know, it was kind of just sent shockwaves. And I thought it was, frankly, very nice work by the Bears to be able to, like you said, find a 4-3 team willing to go after a guy in decline. I had one personnel guy that I was texting with shortly after the move, and they said it was a great deal for the Bears to be able to get anything. In this case, it was a sixth round pick. But it was just one of those cases where I think the new regime was sending a very, very clear message that if you're not our guy, you're not safe, and you have to wonder if players are going to be looking over their shoulder a little bit moving forward.
So, Arthur, you remember the movie Major League?
Of course.
And Ricky Vaughn goes into the locker room, and he's told if there's a red tag in your locker, you know, you're cut, and you know, he got pranked in that one. I have a feeling that when the Bears get to Hallis Hall, if you were drafted or signed by Phil Emery, people are going to be like, you know, scared to look in their locker. Because, you know, they're just trying to distance themselves from anybody, it seems, pretty much, aside from obviously Kyle Long and Kyle Fuller, Alshon Jeffrey, that Emery picks. So I wonder if we'll see some, you know, voodoo as these guys go into their locker room, you know, some of these players who are left over, because that's what these guys are, you know, that's what Ryan Pace and John Fox are doing right now. I've realized, and I'm going to go on a little tangent here, I'm becoming a whiny, curmudgeon-y sports writer when somebody asks me, pretty much. You know, somebody asked me about
Spencer. Nice audio effect there.
Somebody asked me how Seattle was, and my first response was, oh, the press box food was fantastic. The media relations staff was great. I had a good view of the game, unlike the Bears who stick us in the south end zone.
I had the same view of Toledo when I was covering NIU. Someone would ask me, how's Toledo? Well, the enchiladas were outstanding.
Yeah. So, you know, John understands. So my first reaction to the Jared Allen trade was the Bears just got rid of another good interview. We were hoping to get Jared on the podcast for episode 2, and timing didn't work out, so I was still hopeful to get him on. Maybe we can get Carolina Panthers defensive end Jared Allen on. But Ryan Mundy's on IR, he was great. Tim Jennings cut, he was great. And now Jared Allen's gone. And just, look, some of these new players have been pretty good with the media, but Jared Allen was fantastic. I liked hearing from him. I liked talking to him, liked learning from him. And I also thought, Arthur, that this transition clearly didn't work, But he did everything he could. He could have demanded a trade in March and April and May, skipped voluntary workouts, but he was at every practice trying to make this thing work, which I think says a lot about him at this point in his career.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm glad you brought that up. And I wouldn't know if I'd even go as far as to say it didn't work, because it did seem like it wasn't that awkward of a switch. He had the athletic interception. He had some rushes that got close to getting home. Obviously, close isn't good enough, but I was actually impressed with the progress that he made in the move to outside linebacker. But back to your original point, I'm glad you mentioned what a stand-up guy Jared Allen was to deal with. I know our listeners may not care about this, but whatever. I'll just say for a second, too, that he was a pleasure to deal with, even in a season where there was really no pleasures in 2014, obviously. And he's a future Hall of Famer. It's a chance for him to go compete and get that Super Bowl. And I wish him well. I think it maybe is one of those instances, if you think about the timing of the Bears pass rush coming on and Lamar Houston getting healthier, Sam Acho getting healthier. Maybe John Fox wasn't, too off base when he said this could be a win-win for both clubs.
I wonder, I wonder if they tried to trade him for Charles Tillman. They need help at corner. They always need depth at corner. They could have brought Tillman back. Instead, Jared Allen and Charles Tillman and Ron Rivera hanging out in Carolina. The other trade we'll get to, John Bostic to the Patriots for a sixth-round pick. Okay, let's be honest. Bill Belichick, Patriots. John Bostic is either going to be cut in 3 weeks or a Pro Bowler in 2016, the way the Patriots are. Because they don't care who they trade for. And if it doesn't work out, they don't mind just cutting the guy. And they also find ways to take other teams' scrap heaps and turn them into players. We know Bostic has some athleticism, but we also know he didn't fit in Mel Tucker's zone scheme, and clearly Vic Fangio didn't like necessarily him in the 3-4. Then again, Bostic was never healthy. I think it was I wasn't surprised by that move at all. I was even surprised that Bostic made the 53-man roster.
Yeah, I was in the same boat, and therefore I think that's another area where you have to credit Ryan Pace, because this is a guy that a lot of us thought was going to be on the street with no compensation, and to get a six-round pick for him is really impressive. And I think it's also interesting that clearly the doors are open for business in both directions between Hallis Hall and Foxborough. Remember the Ryan Groy, I think it was Matthew Wells trade that happened in the offseason. That didn't work out for either player or either team. Both guys ended up going on to be cut. But it's interesting that Ryan Pace, the youngest general manager in football, has a good enough working relationship with Bill Belichick, the grand poobah in the NFL. Just another kind of angle here that at least intrigues me.
For a long time, I always thought it was the grand poobah, like from Timon and Pumbaa from Lion King.
That was probably always, is, no?
It might be. I was, okay. But I'm curious. I'm going to bring our producers in here, Dan Mott and John Solly, because they don't have to, they're fans of the Bears. These guys are Bears fans, and I'd be curious. Arthur and I can give our own analysis of what it means for the Bears to rebuild and why it's smart to do this, but as a fan, do you guys, this team is not going to make the playoffs. What do you think when you see these trades, and can you just kind of back off and be like, okay, this is a rebuilding year. They have a plan. It might take a while. Can you have patience for that?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely signs of a rebuilding. And at this point, your frustration as a fan, sort of builds and builds, and you're going into week four. You haven't won a game. You got Jimmy Clausen falling all over the field, from sacks and such. But I was actually really stunned by the move that they made with Allen in the first place. I got the text yesterday and saw that and was just kind of in shock. I liked Allen as a, like you guys said, as a guy. But it's clear that, these guys don't fit within the new scheme. And from the start of bringing in Pace and bringing in Fox, I've said all along that I trust this coaching team, and I trust, what Pace is doing. Now, Pace has kind of, shown us that he's also – seems like he's making some mistakes, but overall, I gotta try and have faith. And this is the first year, and we gotta let them do what they're doing. But I guess these moves make sense when you don't see these guys practicing and you see them struggling in such a practice. So,
look, the way you get better in professional sports, and the Cubs have proven this, is tank and get yourself some assets and get yourself a high draft pick. And in the NFL, I don't think that's really any different. To have a top, potentially top three pick in each of the rounds. You can go get a Joey Bosa or a Jared Goff, and I'm sure as the weeks progress, we're going to talk about plenty of those names. So to get a guy like that, those are franchise changers. Those are game changers. I've been on Team Tank for a while, and so 0-3, I'm just fine with, and watching them struggle, it's, you know, that is what it is, but you know that this roster has probably the least amount of talent out of the NFL. So this is kind of what I expected going into the year. So I think if those were your expectations, this season is going along probably as you thought it would. If you thought that just changing coaches was going to make this team a 9-10 win team, I think you were really dreaming on that.
So John Sally, he's ready for the NFL draft. He's already looking ahead to next April and May, Bears on the clock in Chicago, mind you. I forgot to mention this at the top of the show, so I don't want, of course, lose any of you listeners. We do have a Jarvis Jenkins interview later in the show, and Jarvis, of course, had the big game with those two sacks. But Arthur, let's turn the page. Let's talk Oakland Raiders. We do not go behind enemy lines this week. We kind of had the extra time with the trades. We wanted to obviously talk about Jared Allen and John Bostic, and we'll get more into the rebuild later in the show with Hub Arkish. But let's talk Oakland Raiders, the 2-1 Raiders, as you mentioned earlier, going for their three-game win streak. We're going to break down this matchup unit by unit. We start with you, Bears rushing offense versus Raiders run defense.
Yeah, I think this has got to be the strength. I think we'll say this most weeks, but this has to be the area where the Bears are going to find a way to have an edge, obviously with Matt Forte, with an offensive line that has been able to do some things on the ground, and obviously with the coaching staff that has shown a clear commitment to running the football. So as far as the Raiders' run defense is concerned, the truth is they haven't really been challenged a whole lot yet, and I think that's a byproduct of a suddenly explosive offense building some leads. They've only had, I think, fewer rushing attempts than five or six other teams. They are allowing less than 4 yards per carry. They have made some nice offseason additions that are helping in that regard. Dan Williams, the longtime Cardinals nose tackle, is a very stout presence in the middle. Obviously, you've got guys like Khalil Mack. They brought in the former Super Bowl MVP from Seattle, the linebacker Smith. So some pretty good personnel, I think, in the front seven to stuff the run. This will be the biggest test they see, assuming Oakland doesn't, you know, put up a big lead early like we just talked about. So I think the Bears have to get an edge there. With regard to the Bears passing offense versus the Raiders pass defense, Kevin, tell me what you think. It would appear that it's going to be Jimmy Clausen again, but we don't obviously have anything final on that.
Well, if they let Jimmy Clausen throw the ball or these guys get open for him, maybe mm-hmm. something can happen. You know, the biggest thing about the Raiders pass defense, they gave up a ton of yards to Josh McCown last week, and then their defense in general is giving up a lot of overall yards, but that's not a great judge of how good a defense is. They also sacked McCown 5 times. That's where their pass defense will get after you. Khalil Mack is a star off the edge. He's going to be a real challenge for Kyle Long. You got Justin Tuck and Alden Smith coming off the other edge. DJ Hayden's a solid corner. They have Charles Woodson lurking back there. I'm sure he's going to be, you know, looking to get another interception to add to his long career. So you can't give this edge to Jimmy Clausen in the Bears passing game, because, you know, you would think it's going to look better. You would think they'd have a better game plan and try to air it out a little bit more. But and it's not like the Raiders pass, the secondary is great, but the pass rush is good enough that that's going to cause some problems for Jimmy Clausen and company. All right. Raiders rushing offense with Latavius Murray had a big game last week against a Bears run defense that was good in the first half and then got all run over by Thomas Rawls. And if you don't know who Thomas Rawls is, neither did I until he started carrying the football on Sunday.
Yeah, and Latavius Murray is the real deal. And for what it's worth, Thomas Rawls appears to be the real deal too. Former Michigan kid and ran into some trouble off the field. That's why he didn't finish his career at Michigan. But Latavius Murray is a big back. I think he's they saw Eddie Lacy obviously in week one, but I think Murray has a better combination of size and speed coming off a career day against Cleveland, who hasn't stopped anyone on the ground. And Tywan Jones is another name to keep in mind. He's their change of pace guy, a real speed threat, a guy who can really get some explosive plays going. But like you said, the Bears' run defense has been pretty solid, and they're going to get a boost this week with Jeremiah Ratliff returning. They've got, you know, Pernell McPhee playing as well as anyone on that defense, and you know, Eddie Goldman has shown some things. So it's definitely going to be a good test, and I think Oakland is the kind of offense that wants to run in between the tackles. So it'll be definitely a good test, like I said, for that Chicago front and the inside linebackers Shane McClellan and Christian Jones. But we'll give the edge to the Raiders there, just coming off the big game for Murray and coming off kind of the disappointing second half for Chicago. The final who has the edge category, of course, would be the Raiders passing offense. And I think Bears fans are having a little bit of envy right now. They're seeing what Amari Cooper's doing. They're seeing Derek Carr, the young quarterback. They're the two things that the Bears really want on offense that they're lacking right now. And we talked about how the Bears pass defense made some improvements. But, Kevin, who do you think has the edge in this matchup?
Yeah, it's the Raiders. Yeah, watch that Browns game, and Derek Carr really had a nice game. He's a tall, strong-arm quarterback, quick release. The offensive line's been pretty good so far. He's only been sacked once, even though one of his offensive linemen is Jamarcus Webb, starter at right guard.
J-Webb Nation
will be back at Soldier Field. I imagine Pernell McPhee is going to go after that. But, you know, well, they have to put pressure on him because you said Amari Cooper's been great. Michael Crabtree knows how to get open, can make some big plays. And, look, this Bears pass defense, the pass rush came up big last week. The corners played better, but they still got to get it all together. They have the highest opposing quarterback passer rating in the league. Giving up an absurd completion rate so far. The pass defense just hasn't been there yet, so the edge here goes to the Oakland Raiders. I'll go ahead and I guess, interrupt this podcast because I have to mention this, Arthur. Are you seeing what just happened as we're taping? Derrick Rose suffered a left orbital fracture. Will require surgery on Wednesday. I know this is a Bears podcast, but I couldn't. It just this is literally, as we're taping, the news came across, so I had to address it. Somebody brought up a good point on Twitter. I think it was Bobby Bigwheel said, Derrick Rose must really like hospitals. I mean, it's yeah, I mean, well, okay, that's it. We're not going to talk about that anymore because it's going to make the Bears fans listening to this are probably already sad about this 0-3 team, and I might have made them more sad. They're just looking forward to the bowl season.
I thought it was going to be another trade. I was sure you were going to say Matt Forte is packing his bags as we speak. So that's good news for Bears fans, at least. Matt Forte, Alshon Jeffrey, everyone else still here.
Still here as of now. There's still about 15, 20 minutes left in this podcast. But right now, we're going to go to an interview I had with Jarvis Jenkins, who had two sacks on Sunday. We talked before the game in Seattle. I'll come back after the interview and give you a little context of some of the things Jarvis Jenkins was talking about. You'll hear and you'll learn more. But this is Jarvis Jenkins, Bears defensive end. Right now by Jarvis Jenkins. Jarvis is currently packing for Seattle. What's one thing you always have to have with you when you're packing for a road trip?
A red Beats pair. Gotta have that. Gotta have it when I shower. Gotta have it when I watch a film. Gotta have it when I'm in the Normatec.
Okay, so I might be crossing the line here, but when you have it on while you're showering, what's on? What are you listening to?
Well, usually I put on Pandora, Wiz Khalifa Pandora.
Okay.
It's more of like, kind of like more smooth rap music with a little bit of slower beat.
Okay.
Kind of like meditate for me.
Ooh, that's good. So that's, what about pregame? Is the same thing?
Pregame is more of, you know, more of my favorite songs, like songs that I've enjoyed coming up, you know, kind of like Eminem, Lose Yourself, something like that. Oh, kind of like motivational.
That's good.
Music like that. So.
So speaking of what you grew up with, you are about to play Seattle, finishing your three games as the oldest defensive lineman on the team. What's it been like to be the old guy?
I feel like it's taking on more responsibility, you know. Those guys going to play off my energy, you know. Being one of the older guys on the defensive line, learning from guys like Jason Hatcher when I was at Washington, Harry Ratliff, you know, that older guy, younger guys tend to lean on them to make an impact first, you know. Not saying they can't make an impact first, but if you do it, it gets them going, and it makes more plays on the defensive line. So I try to start fast.
And you're 26?
Yes, I'm 27.
You're 27. Okay, I'm 27.
Yeah.
So, and I'm generally one of the young guys here, and you're 27. You're like the old guy.
Yeah.
So did you ever have a situation where you had to, like, you know, Eddie had to teach you how to use your iPhone, or ego was telling you anything?
Oh, no, nothing like that.
Because you're not that old.
I'm pretty good with technology. Yeah. Like that, so
I read you were a basketball star in high school, right?
Yes, sir. That was my first sport.
Power forward, center, or were you?
Center. I was center.
Okay, what was your go-to kind of post move?
My go-to post move actually was top of the key elbow pump fake.
Oh.
I was a pretty good jump shooter.
Cause you can move a little.
Yeah, because the thing was, you know, I was always posting up, so they could tend to double me on the post. So they used to get me at the top of the key.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hit a couple of jump shots, so then they start coming out. So the pump fake, that was my pump fake middle shot was my, that was my forte.
Have you played against, have you played Marty yet?
No, I haven't played Marty yet.
Okay. Because that could get a little, he was pretty good too.
Marty gonna get that work though.
Yeah.
Hit the right Marty. Hey Marty. One-on-one basketball, me and you. One-on-one.
I'm not a one-on-one basketball player, actually. I'm a team player. I'm good at 505 full-court basketball.
Right.
Now you think he's Bruce Bowen.
You play ultimate defense.
Yeah, you play ultimate.
So when you were defending the post, what were you like?
The crazy part was they noticed I was a good center, so they used to start five guards and bring me out to the perimeter.
Oh, really?
That was kind of how, you know, I kind of got good feet as far as, like, I used to get crossed up now, don't get me wrong.
Okay.
A lot of teams used to pull up five guards, used to pull me out, make me guard the perimeter. That way, it didn't look good.
You learn anything from this guy in your time?
Yeah, how to be messy. No. What'd I do?
For those of you who can't see this right now, Jeremiah Ralliff is doing some looking, some pointing, some talking.
Oh, no, what's here.
So also you did some shot put, right?
Oh, I only did like half a year there. I really did.
That was in your bio though.
Yeah, I know, but I did it like is
so it's just not
it was 1 year.
Okay.
It was 1 year.
All right, quick back to music question. Who's the one that plays Trap Queen every day? Like who's Trap Queen's out like every day out here?
I don't know who requests that. It's somebody playlist. I have no idea who it is. All
right. You guys seem, nobody ever seems to know what's going on.
Yeah, no, always random music. Okay. We put requests in, but we ran to get them.
All right, your favorite thing about Chicago so far?
Favorite thing about Chicago? Actually, it's as far as like the fan base. Yeah. You know, my first day here, I went to Sullivan Steakhouse, got my food free. Not saying that's an excuse, but it's like they know who signs, and like the next day is like everybody, it's the word spreads last year.
Yeah.
So the fan base here, as far as sports wise, is pretty
good. Have you been able to find some good barbecue out here yet?
Real urban barbecue is pretty good. But
that is very good.
Yeah,
what's your go to there?
My go to there, I got the pulled chicken. I had the pulled chicken and the half rack of ribs. Those are pretty good.
That's it?
Yeah. Oh, no, the size. You got the cream spinach. And then actually the cornbread with the cornbread.
Very good.
I never
These are the important things we bring to this podcast. Jarvis Shack is breaking down country. Last question I'll ask you. Clemson, grew up in Clemson, you played at Clemson. Favorite kind of memory from your time growing up in South Carolina?
Oh, the game where Clemson and South Carolina got in a fight. That was my first.
That was your first
unofficial visit.
Oh wow!
As a freshman in high school, went there. They run down the hill. They start fighting. I was in the stands. That's I always remember that. That was my first memory every time.
All right, there we go. That's Jarvis Jenkins. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate that.
All right, a little context too, because I think Jarvis Jenkins at times throughout the interview thought we had a video camera recording him. So the first question when I asked him what he likes to pack, he held his red Beats speakers, showed them to me. Also, when we talked basketball, if you couldn't hear, that was Martellus Bennett yelling across the locker room, challenging Jarvis Jenkins. Well, actually, it was Jenkins challenging Marty, but Marty said he's a team player. He doesn't play well in one-on-one. And then Jeremiah Ratliff, who overheard Jarvis Jenkins talking up his own basketball game, was giving him one of those, you got to be kidding me looks. You're not that good at basketball. And then at the end, I believe it was John Bostic, the recently traded John Bostic, who thought it was Jenkins himself who got in a fight. I actually looked up that fight. It was 2004 South Carolina Clemson. Pretty bad fight. And I guess that was the day that Jarvis Jenkins visited Clemson. That's where he went to school. Okay. Had to give that context out because their guys were kind of goofing around the locker room. But big thanks to Jarvis Jenkins. Again, two sacks and a very good power forward who's got some handle, according to him, on the basketball court. As we get ready to wrap up the show, we are joined now by Hub Arkish, who I think you're also a fan of Real Urban Barbecue, or at least...
I was going to say, I love Real Urban Barbecue. Have never understood how anybody eats cream spinach. The thought of it kind of... But yes, Real Urban Barbecue is a good spot.
Very, very good. So, you know, so good. If they're listening right now and want to sponsor us, please feel free, because we are all big fans. Or at least even just give us the free food.
Call David Schuster at the store.
That's true. We can get that. Yeah. Get that hooked up. Arthur Arkish is with us as well. And... Hub, we already talked about the trades. We're kind of talking about this rebuilding team. And the next question, and you wrote about this in your column that folks can see in our insert in the Sun-Times, Daily Herald, Northwest Herald on Thursday, who's next? And I think the ultimate response was Matt Forte is next. But for a team to take on Matt Forte's contract and give up a draft pick at this point in the season, this point in his career, I don't see that happening. I don't think the Bears necessarily want to trade Matt Forte. So do you think there's other guys on this roster that they could trade this at some point?
I'm going to answer that, but I have to ask another question first that's been bugging me since we started this podcast. For those who don't know, some of us live in the studio, some of us on Skype, and I want to know, my youngest grandson is like the cutest baby ever born, and Arthur's Skype avatar has him looking like who just farted. I mean, what's the picture all about?
Wow.
Arthur, the cutest kid I've ever seen. Come on, you could do better than that.
Arthur, what's going on there?
Our podcast listeners obviously can't see the avatar, but it is a picture of little Spencer after he just watched the second half of his first ever Bears game, which was the pasting the Packers put on them. So he's wearing his Bears attire, and that face he is making is after one of the many gaffes by the Chicago defense in that second half.
That explains it. You got to put a cut line on that shot because I think half of Chicago at the end of the second half of that game want to know who just farted. So, it was pretty ugly. I don't think that Matt Forte is going anywhere, strictly because to deal him for less than a third round pick would be kind of silly. And since he is a free agent at the end of the year, nobody's going to give you a third round pick. It would be logical to deal Forte because it's one of the few positions where you may have the heir apparent. Now, I know we haven't seen much. One of the great mysteries of Seattle to me is what the hell happened to Jeremy Langford. I mean, you know, the guy is off the bench on the third possession against the Arizona Cardinals, gets all six carries, gets his first touchdown, looks really good, has been missing in action ever since. Now, beyond that, hopefully we'll get that answer. I love what I've seen of him. I think he may be the Bears' next feature running back, so it might make sense to deal Forte. I just don't think you're going to get value in return, and that's why I doubt they will make that deal.
Arthur, if you can still focus after Grandpa Hub just blasted your Skype picture, is there anybody else you see on this current roster that could go at some point this season?
You kind of said it at the top, Kevin. I think anyone, and I know this is a cop-out, but anyone that wasn't acquired in this offseason is fair game. I really believe that. I tend to agree there won't be fair value in return for Forte. What about Alshon Jeffrey? What about a guy who, you know, I think the Bears may be reluctant to slap the franchise tag on after this year in order to keep him? I know they don't know what they have in Kevin White at this point, but what if Alshon Jeffrey were to get healthy, say, as soon as this Sunday and has a couple big games? There's been some pretty significant wide receiver injuries across the NFL from teams that want to compete. And Alshon hasn't exactly made a great first impression with this new regime. Maybe that's someone to kind of keep in the back of your minds.
Yeah, Arthur, it's a fair question, but you've got the same issue. He's a free agent at the end of the season. What are you going to give up for him? He was a number two pick, four drafts, three seasons ago. And so that's why I think it's unlikely to happen. I actually just wrote about this today for our Thursday insert, so make sure you get your Northwest Herald or Daily Herald or Sun-Times, all the papers in the northern half of the state, really. There's only a couple players on the team. Matt Forte, Martellus Bennett, Jermaine Bushrod. As near as I can tell, probably the only three players that somebody else would give up a draft pick for. I don't think you're going to get a high enough pick to deal Forte. If you got a 5 or a 6 for a playoff wannabe for a Pro Bowl tight end or a starting left tackle, you might do that. I would do that with Bushrod because that would then clear left tackle for Kyle Long, which is where he eventually belongs. But, you know, realistically, guys, I mean, you know, what players, if you're a GM of another team, who do you want to give up a draft pick for?
Yeah, I don't know who else is really left. I mean, someone's going to look at Kadeem Carey, who's not playing, and think they can make something out of him. And you know, there's only so many Phil Emery draft picks left that these guys can go after. And I think, you know, when you start looking ahead to next season, some of the guys you want to be around this core, they can't build a winning team with only rookies and second-year and third-year players. So some of these guys, you know, Pernell McPhee's going to be a part of this team for a while. If Sam Acho or Jarvis Jenkins, two younger guys, continue the way they play, especially Jenkins, they can get signed to multi-year deals. Martellus Bennett, you know, outside Forte, is the best offensive player on this team, and he's young. And you know, this guy didn't play very much the first couple of years in the league, so I wonder if he's somebody who's going to want a new contract, certainly, if he keeps up with the way he's playing. I wonder if he's somebody that they try to, you know, re-sign. But it's amazing, Hub, that obviously heading into this year, and you talked about it a lot, that this is a rebuilding team. And you also talked about, and you wrote this in your column on for Monday, that a lot of people expected 0-3. But here we are. And it's still weird to already be talking about 2016, 2017. We're already in questions about the draft. Again, we all could have predicted it, but it's still kind of weird to just talk about it in this way.
Well, it is, and I think people need to remember it's early. I mean, guys, if I'm going to shock you, I'm going to shock you, but I thought the defense took a big step forward on Sunday in Seattle. Granted, the Seattle offense probably not as potent, certainly as Green Bay's, probably not even as Arizona's. I think the defense will continue to improve. Jared Allen was not making a difference. John Bostic wasn't going to get off the bench. Vic Fangio is figuring out what to do with these guys. It comes down to Jay Cutler, and we have no idea. I mean, you know, maybe maybe they started dealing because they know Cutler's out for 6 weeks. We don't know. But if they get Jay Cutler back and you look at the rest of the schedule, guys, I was in Green Bay Monday night. Kansas City is a team the Bears can play with. I mean, Oakland is 2-1 with, to me, you know, interesting wins, but not exciting wins. The Ravens are 0-3, so they went into Cleveland. If Cutler is running that offense, the Bears competed with Green Bay. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Bears still win 6 games, you know, 5, maybe 7, if Jay Cutler's the quarterback. If he's not, then I want to see David Fales, because I also wouldn't be shocked if they went 0-16 with Jimmy Clausen as their quarterback.
Yeah, and you know, I think we'll probably wait till next week to start talking, really get into the 2016 draft and talk about these quarterbacks. But I will say this. If, you know, remember, they still owe Jay Cutler a lot of money next year, and still a pretty big cap hit. This is a hard sell. It would be a very hard sell to George McCaskey and Ted Phillips. If we're going to assume they're going to go 4-12, 5-11 this year, to say, let's get rid of Cutler and just draft a quarterback, they're probably not going to be good again next year. It's a hard sell going forward if you're going to say, well, let's be, you know, 4 or 5 wins season after season. Cutler might be, as you said, their best chance to win this year. And if he has a good year and he stays healthy, it could still be their best chance to win next season. Let's talk Raiders. Let's wrap this show up as we do every week. We're going to each give you a kind of a player to watch. Then all 5 of us will give you our pick. I think we all did pick the Seahawks to win. This idiot talking right now picked the Bears to cover, which I tell you what looked fantastic at halftime. And then Tyler Lockett happened. And the Bears happened, I guess. So Arthur, I'll start with you. Your player that you're going to be kind of – your player that could be key to a Bears victory on Sunday.
It's Kyle Fuller. He's going to see plenty of Amari Cooper. Obviously, Cooper is way ahead of schedule. Everyone thought he was going to be excellent, and he's been even better than advertised. Kyle Fuller did enough to build off of, I thought, last week. It wasn't perfect. It was far from perfect. But for him, we're looking for small victories. I thought that was one. And the Raiders' passing offense is no joke. Amari Cooper's no joke. Fuller's got a chance to continue building some of that confidence back.
Let me just go back real quickly to what you were talking about before this, Kevin. Yeah. Even with Cutler on the books next year, the Bears are going to have at least $50 million in cap space.
Oh, yeah.
There's no reason to take another $10 million cap hit to save his money. Even if they draft Jared Goff or somebody, you know, with a high pick, I think Bears fans would love to see the quarterback of the future waiting for his turn behind Cutler and people going nuts every week saying, get Cutler out of there. I think the odds have increased dramatically that Cutler's here at least one more year. As far as this Sunday, you know, I look at this football team, I'm watching Lamar Houston. Lamar Houston did not have wonderful things to say about the Oakland Raiders when he got here last year. Last year did not go well for him. This year started slow. He is clearly going to have to get more playing time with Jared Allen gone, and he pretty much is a pure outside rushbacker in the 3-4 right now if he's ever going to go off for the Chicago Bears. He looks to be in good shape. The knee looks sound. I would think that this Sunday might be the game he goes off.
You guys went defense. I'll go offense. Kyle Long, you know, I think he played really well against Arizona. He was the first one to say he made a huge mistake with the false start in Week 3. This is a big game for him against Khalil Mack, because we don't know if Jimmy Clausen can do anything when he is protected. And if Khalil Mack's in the backfield all day, it's just going to ruin anything the Bears want to try to do on offense. And that's going to be all on Kyle Long. A lot of it's going to be on Kyle Long to a big game against a very, very good edge rusher in Khalil Mack. I'll say one more bonus player in case he is available. Jeremiah Ratliff, if he's back from the ankle injury. He hasn't been activated as of the taping of this podcast, so we'll kind of keep an eye on his health. All right, we'll go around the room and give you our picks for Bears-Raiders to see if anybody picks the Bears to win their first game of the season. Let's start with associate producer John Solly.
I'm going to go with Oakland 28, Bears 13.
Oh, wow. 15-point win for Oakland, who, by the way, 3-point favorites in Chicago as of this taping. Dan Mott.
I'm going Oakland 21, Bears 17. I think with Hub, no Cutler, no win.
Arthur?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't know how I got there, but I have the Bears scoring 21 points, even with Jimmy Clausen. That makes no sense at all. Unfortunately, I have Oakland scoring 24. I do think if Jay Cutler plays, this could easily be flip-flopped, but I can't have confidence until I see Cutler back in the lineup.
All right, Hub?
Yeah, I'm with Arthur. I mean, I'm assuming it's Clausen, and if it is, I'm picking the Raiders 27-16. If Cutler should play, I'm picking the Bears 27-16.
Well, guys, I picked the Bears to cover for the third week in a row. But they lose 21-19, four
I
field goals.
I never knew you were such a masochist. He comes out here and beats himself up every week.
I like trying to be different. Four field goals for Robbie Gould in this one, gets closer to the points record, but the Bears lose by two. This is a good Raiders offense, and I'm curious to see what they do against the Bears defense at Soldier Field. All right, that does it for all of us here at the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Don't forget to get all the best Bears news and analysis at ChicagoFootball.com. You can follow all of us on Twitter and check out our stories at Bears_Insider and at ShyFootball. We'd also like to remind you to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. We hit a big milestone in terms of subscribers last week. We want to hit another one this week, so keep subscribing, and we'll keep giving you some podcast gold here on the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. We also want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Fall is here, and you can count on the dependable and long-lasting Silverado to be your harvesting partner. Check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what Dan Hampton drives. For our associate producer, John Solly, executive producer, Dan Mott, our closer, Hub Arkish. Also, a thank you to Jarvis Jenkins for that interview and my co-host, Arthur Arkish. I'm Kevin Fishbane. We'll see if the Bears can get their first win of the season against the Raiders on Sunday, and we'll recap it all right here next week on the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast.